Less than a week away from election 2018, it is time for the BobDavisPodcast.com election final, a final rundown of the battleground on the eve of the midterm elections. What to look for on election night in podcast 773. First of all, I want to thank Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for Home or Business for sponsoring these political podcasts. And to remind you once again that obviously when it gets cold in Minnesota, things happen with plumbing and heating. So remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, like a sticker on your water heater, right? When you have plumbing or heating problems and you have pipe breaks, things like that in the winter, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Four generations in Frogtown for Ryan. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They are metro-wide from St. Paul. And you know what that means. They can get to you pretty much wherever you are in the metro. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. So I don't do predictions and I don't do biases or partisanship. I don't think I need to explain that for the 14th time on these political podcasts. I have just two questions for the 2018 midterm elections. First of all, has Donald Trump changed politics to the point where, as you'll see, the models are off? And two, are the mainstream media's predictions exaggerated to the Democrat side in 2018? In a nutshell, as my son, who has actually turned into a pretty good political analyst himself, has said, the election models, all based on past performance, are probably broken due to the introduction of Donald Trump in 2016 and his tactics. We're going to need a few more elections before enough data is going to emerge to form the basis for future models. If national and, I guess, by extension, local politics have changed because of Trump's tactics and social media and so forth, it means the models everybody bases their predictions on to predict voter behavior and do toss-up race predictions when they don't have any polling data, maybe slightly off. All of these analysts on TV, podcasts, and locally are basing their point of view on what may be an outdated reality or model. Not saying it is. I'm saying we don't know yet, and we will need at least one or two elections before we can say, from a political science point of view, things are different now. So quickly to review, I did 9 podcasts detailing the so-called toss-up races for governor, Senate, and the U.S. House. They're all at thebobdavispodcast.com. I will put links up for the blog. In my view, they're a pretty good record of the storyline, which has been President Trump has damaged the Republican brand forever. The Republican Party will lose control of the House and very possibly the Senate. The Republican Party will lose key gubernatorial races as well. There will be a blue wave. So many angry people are going to come out in droves and drive the Republicans from power. Just look at this video of these protests and how angry these people are. And then the Democrats will impeach and remove Trump as a public service to the nation. None of these storylines discuss how the public might react to a much more conservative President Pence, but that is another podcast if and when the time comes. It's just interesting that nobody ever mentions that. There are 435 seats in the House. The Republicans currently control 235, the Democrats 193. It takes 219 seats to have a majority in the House. Equally divided would be something like 218. So the Democrats have to win at least 26 seats in the House to control that part of the Congress. There have been a number of resignations either to run for higher office or retirement on the GOP side in the House in the last couple of years. Comes down to Republicans defending far more House seats than Democrats in this particular election. The GOP is defending a majority, and this is the source of a lot of these stories about, the Republicans are going to lose. Political analysts early in the year, quote unquote, identified roughly 40, as many as 60 in some cases, House races and about 10 Senate races that at the time were quote unquote toss-ups or close. Being cynical, of course, for me, When they say that there are at least 30 toss-up seats in the House because it makes it look like that would be the easy thing for the Democrats to win, and all of them attain a majority, quote-unquote, easily, I say, well, are they just close or are they actually toss-ups? And I've already demonstrated that not all of these House races are toss-ups. They're just close races. It's not unusual in House races in particular, or Senate races, or even statewide races across the country. We're already seeing that in the Senate. There are 47 Democrat-controlled seats in the Senate, with two of these senators, or two more senators, rather, who are independent that caucus with the Democrats, and 51 controlled by the Republicans. Democrats are defending more Senate seats than Republicans. And you don't hear too much about the blue wave stuff when we talk about the Senate as we do with the House. From the governor's perspective, it's kind of the same thing. 16 Democrat governors, 33 Republicans with one independent. I think that's Alaska, and he is retiring. And in Alaska, looks like the Republican is up. 36 governorships are up for election in 2018, many of them Republican. Again, defending more seats means there's going to be more talk of a Democrat wave. On election night, I'm going to tell you what to look for, and I'm going to do it geographically, and we will start with the East Coast. Now, I'm not going to talk about all the races. I'm not talking about all of – we're not going to go through every single House race or Senate race because there's too many, and it doesn't give you the right kind of overview as far as I'm concerned. I'm just going to tell you what to look for when you start watching TV at 6 or 7 o'clock on Election Day. We're going to start with Virginia's 10th. This is where embattled Republican Barbara Comstock may be as many as 12 points behind. This, from the beginning, has generated all kinds of narrative about how embattled the Republican House majority is, and she has been the poster child for this embattlement. You know, this is North and Western Virginia, from Fairfax all the way out through Loudoun County and Herndon out to Winchester, where so many purple voters voted for Hillary Clinton. And because this was a majority Hillary Clinton district, everyone's saying, look, Barbara Comstock's going to lose. This is proof of the so-called Democrat blue wave, which I'm not saying will happen or won't happen. It's just something to watch. In Florida, there's a number of races to watch. I'll get to them. Florida's 26th district in the House, Carlos Curbelo is in a tight race with Deborah Mercosell Powell. This is Miami, but it's Miami south through the Keys and all the way over to the tip of Florida through the Everglades. Florida's 27th district is a little different. This is Miami Beach and Miami. Republican Maria Salazar is up against Democrat Donna Shalala, the former Secretary of Health and Human Services for President Clinton. In the most recent polls, Shalala is up, but then this is also a very heavy Cuban refugee district, and so it's going to be a very interesting race. Virginia's 7th district is also one of those very close races. David Bratt is up against Abigail Spangenberger. It's a very tight race. You're going to want to watch for that. That one's a little closer to Richmond. And House seats on the East Coast held by Republicans or vacated through retirement are also going to be critical, and we will probably see early results with these seats. So if Democrats have to gain some 20 seats for majority and these seats in the Eastern time zone flip, it's a happy hunting ground for the Democrats, because if they get a number of seats in the East, then getting the last 5 or 10 seats in the Central, Mountain, and Pacific zones might be a little easier. Also, if you see a lot of flips for Republican to Democrat in this part of the country early on, it's going to fuel the "we got a wave" talk as soon as they start flipping, if they do. So some of these are New York State's John Faso. That's up in, I don't know where that is. It's someplace in, it's not New York City. Let's just put it that way. He's in a tight race, but he's ahead. A couple of House seats in New Jersey, which are seats which were vacated due to retirement. And New Jersey's not exactly, you know, Tennessee when it comes to political orientation. A couple of those might flip to Democrat. If you're a Republican, if you're a Democrat, you're going to be happy to see that. Then we have Pennsylvania's 1st, Pennsylvania's 7th, Florida's 7th, and Michigan, and West Virginia, and Ohio, all in the Eastern time zone, where many Republican seats are currently very, very close. But there are also embattled Democrats, and some of these could flip as well. So this might be a mixed bag. I would say if you see Republicans retaining seats in Pennsylvania and Ohio in particular, and Virginia, then the blue wave talk is probably going to be tamped down pretty quickly. If you see them flip, then you're going to hear, if you're a Republican, you should start to get worried. You start to see seats flipping in Florida and Ohio, then you should be a little worried. So the first hour or so of election coverage after the polls close in the East at 8 p.m. are going to be important for the U.S. House. The first elections they're going to talk about election night are probably, though, going to be the statewide races, and these are the big ones. So we will look at Florida first, where former Governor Rick Scott is vying to unseat Bill Nelson, who is the incumbent Democrat. This one remains too close to call. If Rick Scott wins, it might impact the Florida governor's race, where media darling and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and Congressman Ron DeSantis are actually locked in a race that is too close to call. Much will be made of these Florida races, whether for the House, Senate, or Governor's Mansion. Now, they could split this where you could see Rick Scott win the Senate and Gillum win the governor's, but I don't know. I think it's going to go one way or the other, and that's one to watch very early. So if Scott loses early on, if there's a decision early on, and if the governor's race goes to the Democrats, again, that's going to support the blue wave theory. My thinking is we probably won't see results in the first hour of coverage in Florida. It's going to take a while, particularly southern Florida and central Florida and the panhandle, due to obviously damage post-hurricane, I would think. But again, they will make a big deal out of Florida, and they'll have reporters there and everything else. They'll be cutting to Florida and everything else. Then we come to Georgia. The governor's race between Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams is very close, and it will be a huge thing because Stacey Abrams, if she wins, will be, I think, Georgia's first black governor. And so it's going to be an interesting race, and it's been tight all along because I think since Reagan, Georgia has been a pretty pretty solid Republican state. And so there's lots of discussion about how, you know, Trump has changed the dynamics and that Georgia is now, because of the way he's handled certain policies, is going to start flipping, becoming a purple state. Again, that remains to be seen. Ohio is going to be very important because, of course, of 2016. But there's a couple of interesting races in Ohio. Veteran Ohio political Mike DeWine is up against former Consumer Financial Protection Board head and union negotiator Richard Cordray for governor. Of course, moderate and anti-Trump guy. What's his name? I can't remember his name right now. John Kasich retiring, and he's term limited out. So this is a big deal. This would be a governor pickup for Democrats, and it could happen because Ohio is one of those states that can go any way. So it gets a lot of attention if Cordray pulls out a big lead right away. Here's the thing. DeWine is from central Ohio, so those results could take some time because probably around Dayton and Columbus and places like that, DeWine is going to do pretty well. Then we come to Tennessee, the Tennessee Senate. This is all in still the Eastern time zone. Most of Tennessee is in the Central time zone, but roughly a quarter of the state is in the Eastern time zone. And I would think, I'm going to say it, I don't know if I'm right about this, this is the Democrat side of the state. This is where Marsha Blackburn is battling against Phil Bredesen. So you might hear some early results trickling out of Eastern Tennessee, reported by Taylor Swift. Just kidding. Don't take all that because we have to wait for the rest of the state and the polls, and the rest of the state will close an hour later, right? Because the rest of the state is in the central time zone. Also in the Eastern time zone, at least mostly, is Indiana. Democrat Joe Donnelly is 3 points ahead for the Indiana Senate race, but this has been very close. A Republican pickup here would dominate early coverage. Most of Indiana is in the Eastern time zone, but Gary and the southwestern tip is in the central time zone. Gary being Elkhart, Gary, etc., is the Democrat stronghold. The southwestern tip would be a Republican stronghold. So early results in Indiana might show something different from what actually ends up happening, depending on how it is. It's just a very close Senate race. Now, one of the issues in a lot of these local elections is trade protection, particularly in the Midwest. So it's in the news. You hear a lot of talk about it, foreign manufacturing tariffs. It is causing a little bit of volatility in the stock market. Companies are thinking about preparing to bring some of the manufacturing back to the U.S. So I've been concentrating on reminding you that many companies have brought this stuff in-house, and now they are starting to ask themselves why they did that. If you are this company, if you're in the decision-making chain of this company, what you need is a great American manufacturing company, and that is Depot Star. DEPOT, Depot Star in Minnesota, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Okay, we're going to move now to the central time zone. Again, on election night, first thing they're going to talk about when we get to the central time zone is Wisconsin. They will be talking about it from the beginning, where Scott Walker is in a tough race for the third term. Media is going to focus on this as a harbinger of the rest of the country, and Walker could lose this one. He's been down, but it's closer now than it has been, and he has been down before. So this one is going to be a nail biter for Republicans and Democrats because they see this as a harbinger race for sure. In Illinois, Congressman Pete Roskam is in a very close race to retain his seat. If this one flips, you know, hilarity will ensue. Iowa's first district Republican incumbent Rod Blum is in a race that pundits say leans Democrat. Again, these are two that if you see Republicans retaining their seats, it might be significant. And as far as why I say this, it involves the New York Times Siena poll, which I'll talk about at the end of this podcast. If they flip, it's a huge story. They will cover this up the yin-yang if it flips. In Kansas, we have second district political quote-unquote heavyweight Paul Davis, who is a Democrat, against Republican Steve Watkins. Watkins is now ahead. It's Kansas. And this is not exactly an urban district, as I think I talked about in at least one of the podcasts. Another Republican farm state House race that will get headlines if it flips. And, you know, Davis, as others like O'Rourke, some pretty good candidates to do their best against Republicans to regain control of the Senate and the House. So some of these candidates are very good, and I don't want it to sound like I'm putting them down. I am setting my sails against the storyline, unless the storyline is true. And the storyline is, you know, Republicans are going to be out. Well, you know, when you actually look into these, you see very close races, as I have said 100 times. So I don't, you know, I think you have to be very careful about just saying that this is going to flip or not flip just because someone like Paul Davis, who is a very experienced fundraiser and a major politico in Kansas, is running for Congress. Now, there is a race in Kansas that has a Republican who is in trouble. This is kind of a Barbara Comstock class situation. Kevin Yoder consistently trails in the polls, and this is of interest because this is southern suburban Kansas City, and these are some pretty nice suburbs. So, you know, this will speak to the theory that the rich suburban women don't like Donald Trump, and so he does better in rural districts and not in these suburban districts. If Yoder retains that seat, well, then that's a completely different story. Now, for people listening to my podcast in my home state of Minnesota, Minnesota is ground zero for. There's going to be an awful lot of media attention on election night focused on the land of 10,000 lakes. Eric Paulson in the 3rd District is in the Leans Democrat column. You know, and I'm going to say this, the polling is spotty in these districts that I'm going to tell you about. And I think this is true in all these places where it looks like the Republican could lose. And they could. Eric Paulson could be out. He's running against Dean Phillips, well-financed, good candidate in the 3rd District. And Paulson has had some issues, but he has taken a strong position against Trump or for Trump, depending on what's going on. It's hard to pin Eric Paulson down. He has been embattled before. So, and I don't want to belabor Minnesota just because I live here. But again, it's in the Lean Democrat column based on 2 polls. I don't think that's wise, but we'll see. Jason Lewis is the incumbent in the 2nd. Same situation. Suburban Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's now in the Lean's Democrat column because of one poll that had his opponent up by 12 points. I don't believe that poll. And there's one for Republicans, by the way, in the 8th District that I don't believe either. So when we talk about the 8th District, that's also a close race. It usually leans Democrat. That seat leans Democrat, but you never know. The guy challenging there has a pretty good union history, so that's going to be a very interesting situation for because you could conceivably have two Democrat pickups in the southern part of the state and two and a Republican pickup in the northern part of the state. And then in the first district, which quote unquote leans Democrat, you have a pretty strong challenger who's a Republican. So it's conceivable that the Republicans could lose the third and the second and pick up the eighth and the first, and things would remain the same. The final thing there is Colin Peterson, Democrat in the seventh district, who is out in the western part of the state. Doesn't appear to be on a path to lose, but it's definitely in the being watched category. And then we have an attorney general's race in Minnesota, which is going to flip to Republicans if Doug Wardlow beats embattled Keith Ellison, who is the DNC deputy chair and currently 5th District Congressman from Minnesota. And of course, the governor's race, which isn't a toss-up, but things are fluid enough in Minnesota that a win by Republican Jeff Johnson is going to make national news because it's a flip. As would be a victory by Karen Housley over incumbent appointed Senator Tina Smith running in her first election. That would be an unexpected pickup for the Republicans. And again, making national news in Minnesota. Again, many of the Republican seats are in these suburban zip codes where Trump didn't do as well as he did in rural districts or in places like the 8th District. And again, the thought is suburban Republicans are going to turn against him and throw these GOP congressmen out in places like Kansas and Iowa, around Des Moines, Kansas around Kansas City, and in Minneapolis-St. Paul. It's hard to tell. Now, obviously, the big central time zone state is Texas, and there's lots of interest in Texas because there's lots of House seats and Senate races and governor's races and everything else in Texas. First of all, two House races you should look at. One is Pete Sessions, not Jeff Sessions, but Pete Sessions in the 7th District and John Culberson in the 32nd District. If these two flip, they will talk about it in relation to the Senate race. They had, what's his name? John Hurd, I think his name is, Will Hurd, in Texas previously as a toss-up, and there's no way he's like 15 points ahead now. So I don't think that one's going to flip. But if those two flip, that will be discussed in relation to the Senate race, where results will trickle in, and this is the one where Ted Cruz leads media darling challenger Beto O'Rourke, who has spent a fortune and raised a fortune there. They have already put this election in the Lean's Republican column. So a win for O'Rourke combined with any victories in the Eastern time zone for Democrats will cement the blue wave storyline. And then the rest of Tennessee finally will probably come in, which remains a close race, Blackburn against Bredesen. This is where you'll see the Republicans in the western part of the state. A final, again, in Tennessee with a Democrat victory will predicate discussion of Texas and open more importantly to Arizona in the Mountain time zone and Montana. But there is two more in the Central time zone that are going to come up. One is Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill, a Democrat in a fight to retain her Senate seat. That is too close to call. They were saying she was going to lose, but it's tightened up since. A pickup here for Republicans would be a big story for the Central time zone. So at this point, you will already know about Florida, Ohio, Indiana, the Georgia governor's race, tight House races in the East and Midwest. My thinking is it's probably going to be a mixed bag, which means that the count, the magic number for the House being 26, the magic number for the Senate being what, three or four, makes the Midwest rich hunting ground for Democrats to reach a majority, as well as the Mountain time zone. Holds anywhere in the Midwest, especially for Republicans, but also for Democrats, will be a huge story in the second hour of coverage. Moreover, with so many races close, we may be waiting on Minnesota's 8th, Minnesota's 2nd and 3rd and 1st, Indiana's Senate, Texas's Senate, and maybe even Florida's Senate and the Tennessee Senate races. If they're not close, results and Republican holds in the second hour of coverage for the major networks might actually be pretty glum at this point. So if you don't see Democrat seats being picked up out east and you don't, and you see, a Senate, win in Tennessee or something to that effect, or you see a pickup for Republicans in Indiana, If you see a Republican win for governor in Georgia or a Senate pickup in Florida, you know, that's going to make pretty glum coverage for people who have staked their reputations on this blue wave, you know, theory. It isn't that the Democrats or Republicans are going to win. I mean, you can certainly make the point that the media is biased and they're going to be upset if Democrats don't win. I'm not going to make that point. I'm just saying that they're committed to a certain storyline. And if that storyline doesn't play out, they're going to be scrambling. Finally, the Senate race nobody's talking about suddenly is Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, who will almost certainly lose her seat. Her Republican opponent is roughly ahead 10 to 14 points in almost every poll. I don't know why, but that's probably going to be a pickup for Republicans. You know, I'm not saying it's going to go that way, but this is one of the few races that you could actually call early with a little bit of results. So you might see, I think it's North Dakota, come in early. Then we come to the Mountain Time Zone, which has one really significant race in the Senate, and this is Republican Martha McSally against, I think it's Kathleen Sinema. It's a close race. It's impossible to call. It has been dirty. There have been all sorts of insults exchanged, and they will be dribbling results in the second hour from counties which have already voted. Also in the Mountain Time Zone is Montana, and this is interesting because John Tester is in a close – I would say it's a close race to retain his Senate seat, although Tester has been in the lead all along. It is tightening up, and the president campaigned there, and since he put himself on the line for challenger Matt Rosendale, this one's going to be fodder for the talking heads. Oh, look, you know, one of Trump's candidates lost the race, but – it could be a pickup. And if it is, then that's going to be something that people are going to talk about. So, you know, if you just think about this for a second. So if you get Republicans get Florida and Indiana and they hold in Tennessee and they pick up a seat in Minnesota and they hold in Texas. I'm trying to think if there's any other places where there were Senate races. And they're going to get the pickup in North Dakota more than likely. And they pick up Missouri. Now we've got a 6 or 7 seat majority for the Republicans in the Senate, right? As far as House races, if they're able to hold there, well, then we're going to be talking about a red wave. At least the president will, right? Whether it's a wave or not, those are some, you know, this is how this could go in a rather unexpected way, because the storyline is those are all going to be losses and failures for the Republicans. There's a close House race in Utah where Mia Love is trying to retain her seat. Also, Colorado's 6th District is controlled by Republicans right now. This is one that leans Democrat by a fairly wide margin, so this could be a pickup for Democrats. And then we come to the Pacific time zone. Let's talk about the Senate first, because this is what everyone's going to be talking about. Dean Heller, incumbent, battling to retain his seat, and it is close. Heller's in the lead, but it's like 1 or 2 points. This is a bellwether race since Nevada has generally leaned Republican and where a close governor's race is going on as well. Heller is currently in the lead, but it's within a margin of error. This is going to be one of the first races they'll talk about. And a pickup for Democrats will be big news. There's also a governor's race there, which could be news for Republicans if they get it. And then we come to California, and I don't have time to go through all the races in California, and you would be bored to tears if I did. If there's a number of races in California. If they flip, it'll be a big deal because there's a lot of seats in California. So, and California is not exactly Texas when it comes to Republicans versus Democrats, but the Central Valley of California, especially the Southland, it tends to be rather conservative. So you have to watch the Valley. That is Northern Los Angeles County, Orange County, Southern California around San Diego. These are traditionally Republican seats and pretty conservative anyway, and it's kind of confusing with California because most people, and I've done it, you look at California, you see blue and you think there are no Republicans in California, but there are. And the thing is, this is the last real hunting ground for Democrats to reach that 24 or 25 seat critical mass necessary for taking the House. So if there are a number of Republican holds at this point in the evening, and even some Republican pickups, even with Democrat pickups, and they've only picked up, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 seats, if for them to get to 25 or 26, even with – they would have to take all the seats in California. So let's suppose they win 2 or 3 in Virginia. They win a couple in Ohio. That's 6. They win, you know, a couple in Minnesota, but they lose a couple in Minnesota. So that's an even Steven situation. Or they pick up a couple in Kansas. That's It's 10. Now you see what I'm saying. They pick up one in Arizona. Now we're at 11. And then we come to California where they might be able to get 5 or 6. So if they have not had a good night so far, winning these seats won't make too much of a difference. But if they're close, it could put them over the line in terms of having the majority of the House. Then you go up to Washington State's 8th district, which is an open seat. They have been saying this is going to be a Democrat. I think it's a Democrat pickup. But Dino Rossi, who has been running for office up there for a while, state legislator, Legislator and everything else. He just has an interesting name, has about an 8-point advantage in one poll. This is one to watch. Most of Washington's House seats lean Republican, particularly in the eastern part of the state, east of or in the Cascades, which are more Republican than the coastal areas. There's a tight race for governor in Oregon. It won't make any impact on, I don't think, on the House or Senate races, but again, that's one that you want to watch too. Other than that, it's all about California when it comes to the West Coast. And then there are some 155 ballot initiatives that usually are put on the ballot to influence the voters, in other words, getting the vote out in key states and key places. California has a rent control measure, which is a big deal in Northern California, and a gas tax measure and a dialysis profit limiting measure, which attracted a lot of funding. You know, I can't go through all 155 ballot measures, but there are a few. There's a lot of healthcare measures across the country. Then there's a mixed bag of other ones. Florida has a casino measure. There's an energy deregulation initiative in Nevada. Oregon has a Medicare tax initiative, and many more. And I'll link you to the Ballotopedia page that just lists those if you're that interested in the ballot situation. Now I have a couple of final words and cautions. So there's a thing called the New York Times Siena College poll. I've talked about this in a couple of podcasts. I've looked into this poll. So here's what they do. They use college, I believe college volunteers, but they could be college students who are paid to make the calls. And they call into, they call it live polling, and they call into districts and they call looking for registered voters. So they don't, it's not a random sample, it's a sample of registered voters. And they hit pockets. So this is where you're getting these I would call them spurious emissions, where you're getting 12-point leads for one candidate over another. And it's happening with Republicans and Democrats, because most states have pockets of voters, and sometimes you hit Republicans and sometimes you hit Democrats. So if you're talking about that district down in Florida, which is South Miami to the Keys, you know, the Keys have a whole different approach to politics than South Florida. So if you hit a pocket of libertarians, if you hit a pocket I'm not saying Libertarian Party people, but they're different down there. So if you hit a pocket of Republicans in the Keys, then, so the middle Keys have a different politic than the final key down there at the far southern end. So Key West. So you have to keep, kind of take all that into account. And the Siena poll is not controlling for geography as far as I can tell, and it's not random. So what's happening? Well, we do poll averaging now. So where you take the averages of polls. Now, I don't always do this. I've talked about this a little bit, but it's been very popular to average out all the polls. Well, you are averaging apples and oranges, because all these polls are done differently. The significant thing about the Siena poll, because it gets these widely skewed results, it could be skewing the averages. And you could have some of these candidates up by 6 or 7 when in fact they're up by 1 or 2, so they're within the margin of error. So be very careful if you're looking at the polls. You really ought to mentally take out the Siena poll from the average and look at the average without the Siena poll. Then look at the average with the Siena poll. I don't know if it's predictive. The thing about the Siena poll is it's very high sample sizes. So if the Siena poll is predictive, when I say high sample sizes, they'll call 17,000 people. So, not in one night, but they, some of their total sample sizes are massive. My experience has been sometimes really large sample sizes can, and the word is obviate, polls that are based on random sampling. And I don't have enough time to explain the math behind that. But large sample sizes are better than small sample sizes, even if the small sample sizes give you a standard deviation that's acceptable for polling people. So the standard deviation is, depending on the poll, depending on the state, It could be 4 or 5, you know, points either way. So that's the problem that I have with the Siena poll, because it's skewing some of these averages. And so I've been taking out the Siena poll average. So what does that mean? Well, it means that the Joe Donnelly race is a lot closer than it looks. It means that the Ted Cruz race is a lot closer than it looks. It means that the Rick Scott race is closer than it looks. And it means that a number of these congressional races, these House races rather, are also close, as, I mean, some of the Senate races as well. I just mentioned a couple of them. This is where I get Claire McCaskill in a toss-up, as opposed to saying that leans Republican. Same thing in Alaska, where the withdrawal of an independent guy supposedly was going to throw it to the Democrats, and it looks like the Republican is up. So you got to be careful with the Siena poll. The other thing is, and I'm going to say it again because it blows my mind that they keep calling a lot of these toss-up races or leans Democrat, because the only poll that they have is one poll. So look, if you're in a House race, let's just look at, I don't know, third district's probably a bad example. Let's look at the second district. And there's one or two polls, and they were taken in September. They're useless right now. So pointing to a poll taken in September is, and say, well, that's a toss-up race, or that's a lean Republican or lean Democrat, is stupid. A poll that old is useless. Another useless thing, in my opinion, is the generic vote. A lot of these guys are basing their predictions on the generic vote. I suppose the generic preference for Republican and Democrat is applicable if you go back and look at elections going back. But remember what I said at the beginning of the podcast about the models. So if you're working with metrics where you say the generic Republican Democrat vote is reliable for predicting races nationwide within 2 to 3 points, then okay. But when you have races that are that close, maybe it isn't. And again, if politics has changed because Trump gets people out to vote, remember, Donald Trump has been flying around the country doing these massive rallies, and they are massive. People come out to see this guy. What effect is that going to have on the quote unquote generic vote? Then we get into midterms, we get into who votes, and whether or not the get out the vote campaign for both political parties is working. And I want to say very quickly a word about I vote the man, not the party. I hear that a lot. This is a partisan vote, this midterm election. This isn't a go vote for the man type of election. If you're voting as a Democrat, you should vote a straight Democrat ticket. If you're voting as a Republican, you should vote a straight Republican ticket. And you will have to hold your nose to do so. Many people will. If you're not going to do that, I don't see the point of voting, because you're just wasting your vote, as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to vote the man, because this is about party control of the House in particular and the Senate at a secondary level. That's what it's about. And in some cases in the states, it's about who's going to control the state legislature as well. So, I just think it's important that people understand that this is a partisan election. And I'm not taking sides. I'm not saying I want the Republicans to win or I want the Democrats to win. You know, all of that's going to come later in terms of whether or not Trump has had a negative or positive effect. And in particular, what Trump ends up doing as far as, quote unquote, destroying the Republican Party or not when it comes to principles. I'm not doing any of that in this, because what I'm telling you is what to look for on election night, either way. So you're a Democrat, you can listen to this, now you know, because you can see the path to House control if you're a Democrat, and you can see a path to defending the majority in the House and widening the majority in the Senate and getting some governorships if you're a Republican. I don't know how it's going to go, because it depends on who votes. If the standard people in midterms vote, then we may not see too much of a change. If a large number of quote unquote Democrat voters, so younger demographics and minorities, go out and vote, if early voting, if more relaxed voting rules, if redistricting, you know, there was a Supreme Court ruling on the Pennsylvania district in question that they wanted to redistrict and now they can't. So there's a bunch of things that, will have local impact. And a lot of it depends on who actually ends up going out to vote. And then the last thing that I would say, and then I'll close, is that, we keep looking at this from a national perspective. That's what we're told. The national media wants to nationalize all of the House races and all of the Senate races. I maintain Senate races are statewide races. Senators, in some ways, are kind of like governors, where national issues are important, but senators have to be elected by an entire state. And congressmen are, you know, House members are elected from districts. And in some cases, what's going on in a district with a personality or an individual or an issue can be just as powerful as anything else. I can't possibly know all of those. I can't possibly know what's going on with John Culbertson in Texas. I could sit here and you can pull up newspaper articles from that district, and you still won't get a clean picture. You kind of have to talk to people in the state. And, of course, whoever you talk to is going to be biased one way or the other. So you can't depend on that either. In Minnesota, you know, a good example is Eric Paulson, who he keeps his head down. Nobody ever hears from this guy. He's in an election. Most of the time he wants to talk about canoeing or hot dish, which is pretty smart in Minnesota, right? And suddenly he's in the fight for his life, and he's going down in flames, and it's hard to tell. Who knows what the situation is? But it's as much about Eric Paulson as an individual as anything else. We have a guy who's a talk radio guy, Jason Lewis, friend of mine, who's getting hammered because of some things he said on the radio years and years ago that they're using against him. And here's another one where the Siena poll puts his challenger up by 12. He's got a little bit more personality, and it's about him in that district as much as anything else. Some of these other places, it has nothing to do with that. Colin Peterson's been a congressman for 150 years in the 7th District. The 1st District of Minnesota is very rural. It's completely different than the 8th District. So what I'm trying to say is whether it's Wisconsin or it is Kansas or California, you know, these House districts are very individuated, and it's hard to make national predictions, and yet that is what is happening. So on top of all this, you get these ads, which I don't know whether people say they hate them, but they seem to work. Because I'm signed up on both Republican and Democrat email lists, I'm getting hundreds of emails a day. You know, this is the worst thing ever. We need money. This guy's going to lose. These guys are going to win. This is our chance, you know, and on and on. It's all BS. And I'm getting tons of emails. And then, of course, we are seeing ads on social media. You know, when you're on YouTube, you get the ad that plays for 4 seconds and you can't turn it off. Or, you know, Facebook, where you're, you know, again, we don't know if these things are going to have an impact or not. And so there's a lot of questions after the election and the numbers are in. Well, then we can start talking about what happened. And we will do that on election night. So here's what I'm going to do on election night. I will be sitting here drinking coffee, and I'll have the monitors up. I do not watch any media on election night. I just watch the Secretary of State's offices, and I watch the, you know, totals appear on various websites. And so I have a big monitor on one computer, and I have a big monitor on the other computer. And when something comes up, I hit record, and I record. And then I stop, and then I hit record. So what's going to happen is, at the end of the evening, there'll be a 35, 40-minute podcast, which will kind of be the time factor. So it'll be a collapsed coverage of the election as it happens. So that's what's in store for you on November 6th. Other than that, we're a week away. I have nothing further to say about this election or anything else. I think what I'm going to do is declare a moratorium on any kind of, quote, political content, unquote, and talk about other stuff for the next two or three podcasts until we get to November 6th. Happy Halloween, by the way. So this is October 31st when I'm recording this. And, It's then from here, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 5 days. So it's 5 days, no more politics until after Election Day. Well, it'll be election night, and maybe somebody will come over, and maybe I'll have visitors, and we'll record too. So that is the latest on election 2018, the midterm. All bets are off. Let's just put it that way. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you have plumbing or heating problems this winter, you need a reliable Plumber. You want reliable service? That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. And printing needs for the BobDavisPodcast.com are handled by Cartridge World. Why pay more for your print cartridges? Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. Here's what you do. You can call them at 763-420-6632. Free delivery on qualifying orders. Or you can click on that awesome Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Cartridge World. Remember, you can subscribe to the feed for thebobdavispodcast.com right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can also listen to live streaming, and you can get the Bob Davis Podcasts right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher.com, all over the place. Google Play, the Google Podcast app, and more. And thanks again for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thank you. Brandon Fertig for the sharing of the homeless tent camp podcast on Facebook, and for your likes and shares on Facebook and Twitter and other social media. And thanks for listening to podcast 773, the election final, just a week away from election day, November 6th, 2018.